morning, Omni Hinui, and a very good morning to you, Auckland. It's 5 or 6 minutes past nine, and you're listening to 104.6 Planet FM and Keep Auckland Beautiful. How about those All Blacks? That's all I'll say. My guest this morning is goes by the name of Oliver, and is doing some very interesting environmental work around Auckland. Good morning, Oliver. Welcome to the show.
Kia ora, Rick. It's good to be on the program.
I'm really fascinated to have learned that you actually do conservation work in Auckland, but not with any, you know, you're not affiliated with any particular organization. What exactly is it that you're doing out there?
Right. What I do is just drive around the streets and I see moss plants almost everywhere, and I tackle it. Sometimes if I'm only on my way for somewhere else, I'll stop just to make a note and go back and revisit those sites later.
Okay, so moth plant is your thing. What exactly is moth plant? It's obviously an invasive species.
Yes, it's a vine. And you get a lot of it in the cities, but also in forest margins, hedges, wasteland, roadsides, coastal areas. And it just grows so well. It's shade tolerant. And it's grows very fast. It'll climb up to 6 meters and higher, and it has pods, and each pod can have up to 1,000 seeds. When the pods ripen, they dry up and they split open, and the wind carries the seeds for up to 20 kilometers.
So it's a windborne thing.
Yep.
Now, what exactly does it look like? Does it have flowers?
The vine? Flowers are usually starting around January. It's a magnificent display of white, sort of star-like flowers. And they develop into pods, which starting from about a month later, February, and you can get pods on the vines for at least half a year. And it's the pods that are the ones that, of course, cause a reproduction when they ripen. So we target the pods and pull out the roots when we can.
Right. And what do... Now, the flowers you've kind of described, they're white and star-like, but they're not jasmine. They're bigger and thicker than jasmine, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay. With a yellow center, if I recall, am I right?
That's right, yes.
All right. I'm just trying to remember the pictures I've seen. And the pods, what do they look like? Now, those aren't those milky white pods that look like silk cocoons, are they?
No. They're much bigger. They're pear-shaped, oval-shaped.
Okay.
As big as pears, and they're crinkly. Some people who like choco think that they're choco, because choco is quite an unusual fruit. It costs about $2 in the shops, but these are not edible. In fact, the seeds are poisonous, and the pods themselves are much softer than choco.
Okay, so they kind of squish in your hand.
Yes.
Right, so when you go out there, if you can't get at the roots, do you just remove the pods? Is that...
Well, the first priority is to remove the pods. And in doing so, we have to take them to landfill, which means I put them into the wheelie bin when I get home. And since my wheelie bin fills up on the first day that it's been emptied, I then fill them into sacks and pile the sacks up in my yard. And in contrast, yes, to the vines, yes, we pull them out, dig them out if we can. Sometimes the roots are so big or so inaccessible that we unfortunately have to resort to cutting and pasting, which means cutting them as close to the ground as we can and pasting them with some pesticide or herbicide.
Right, and that'll just feed back in and literally kill it at the roots.
Exactly. But of course, whatever sites we target, and I do say we because I'm not the only one doing this.
I was just going to ask that question. Good on you.
We look at, we tend to revisit sites that have been badly infested a year later, or if we've got time in the spring when the pods are no longer there and when the flowers are going to be coming along soon, we'll go back and check that we've cleared it all. Mostly we haven't, so it means clearing, pulling out some more vines.
Well, it bounces back over winter, doesn't it, because it's pretty hardy.
Very hardy. The thing, too, is sometimes you get areas where there are literally thousands of seedlings coming up, and you can't really pull each one of those out. It'll be there the whole day or the whole week. So reluctantly, again, I would sometimes then spray them with just Roundup, because when the seedlings are so small, Roundup can be effective, but on the mature vines, you need something stronger.
Okay. So this is quite an operation. Now, you said we, and I'd like to go back to that. So do you do this with some friends?
Occasionally, we go as a team. In fact, a couple of months ago, we went to a site on the North Shore next to the motorway, and there were about seven of us. So someone reorganized that event, and there was enough to do for seven of us for at least a couple of hours. But most of the time, I'm actually doing it on my own, which means I can choose my time and take my own time and do as much as I feel like doing and quit when I want to.
Right. Now, aside from the environmental benefits, what's in it for you? I mean, what do you take out of it?
I enjoy it, and I'm outside. I don't like going to the gym. I find that too boring, so it's my outdoor exercise, which balances all the work I do at home on my computer. When I say work, most of it's fun. But right. I do spend a lot of time in front of the monitor, so it's good for me to get out.
Great. So it's, well, as you say, it's the way to get out from in front of the screen.
Which, it sure is.
Whether it's the telly or the computer.
Yep.
Awesome. Now, who else volunteers with you? I mean, you know, and by that I mean, describe them in terms of age and gender.
Yep.
And
mostly they are retired people like myself, but through the Friends of Maungefoe, we have quite a few people in that group, even though I don't actually live in Mount Eden. I'm a member of Friends of Maungefoe, and often we'll do moth plant clearance work together with them. But I've also been over to Motutapu, for instance, with the Motutapu Restoration Trust, and they have a good team of volunteers there who go out regularly to tackle moth plant on the islands, particularly Motutapu.
That's incredible. So you've got this particular passion for this particular invasive weed, and you spread yourself around to the,
yes.
to the various trusts that are out there tackling it.
Yes, and I have to say also, and that's really good, there's a teacher in Howick who also gets the students to go with him, and in their spare time, of course, not during the school hours, and they tackle the sort of eastern suburbs area. So there are people all around town, and I know there's one or two in South Auckland as well, and there's that team I mentioned earlier on the North Shore. So there are a few of us around doing what we can.
Right. Now, I was doing some homework on the moth plant, and there are three really big zones in Auckland where it's actually a prohibited plant, and if it's on your property, you must destroy it.
That's right. You've got the same leaflet as I have, maybe. That's the Waitakere and Hunua weed control zones and the Hauraki Gulf Islands.
Yes, and then there's a big chunk, like up Cape Rodney Way, that's on the mainland that kind of overlooks the Hauraki Gulf Islands, and I suppose that would be a launching point with the prevailing winds for it to get over to the islands.
It does indeed, yes.
So if you have it there, you must eradicate it.
Yes.
And if not in one of those areas, then it's up to the landowner whether or not they do something.
Unfortunately, yes, but can I come back to that in a moment, because I should mention probably the most important thing, which I haven't said yet, and that is at the rate they grow, and the reason they're such a threat to the environment is that they simply strangle and smother everything they grow on. So especially your native trees, but also exotics, they can be smothered, strangled within a couple of years if the vines are left to grow on their own.
So they love the climate here so much that they'll
yes.
they'll destroy anything, foreign or domestic.
I think they come from South America, so they might be fine there, but they're not fine here in Auckland. And with Auckland being one of the weediest cities in the world, we have our hands filled with trying to get at the stuff.
Right. Okay. And so do you help people who have to eradicate it? I mean, do you ever run into groups who discover it and they're in those prohibited areas?
Not directly like that. But I was coming to the other thing you mentioned, yes. With the responsibility of landowners, in those specific areas, that's a job for a council, I guess. But where they're not obliged to clear the stuff themselves, what I've started doing since about 2 years ago is I'll actually go and door knock If I can't get the plants from the footpath or from the street, or some of them, of course, are in reserves where I can go, but if they're on someone's private property, I'll go up and knock on the door. Hand them a leaflet, and the council has just produced a brand new leaflet, a pretty glossy one, but I still have some of my old leaflets, very basically written to explain the threat that moss plant presents. And 99.5% of the time, the owners or residents are really happy that I'm there or others are there to clear the stuff from their properties.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. Would a typical householder in Auckland see this lovely vine growing on the back fence or winding itself around the, you know, tree in the corner of the yard and think, oh, that's beautiful because it flowers? I mean, would the typical person actually ignore it because they think it's beautiful?
One person only so far has thought it beautiful.
Okay.
Most have had some encounter with it and are really pleased to get rid of it because they say it's nasty stuff, it's sticky, and it just spreads so fast. And about half the people have never even heard of it and aren't aware of it.
Right, and you've brought it to their attention because
yes.
You know what you're looking for.
Yes, and hopefully, you know, if I've done their area, they'll look after it themselves in future. So if there is anything I've missed or it comes back a year later, then hopefully they will do something. But, you know, I do go back and check a year later in case they haven't or in case they're tenants and they've moved and there's new people have moved in and all that sort of thing.
How easy is it to recognize when it's not flowering and when it doesn't have pods? In other words, for the balance of the year when it's just leaves?
Yes. These are quite distinctive. They're arrow-shaped, and they're dark green on the top, light green underneath. And if you break the stem, that's probably the easiest way. Just break through the stem, and there's a milky sap which comes from. And that's why it's sometimes called milkweed. And if you did want to know the other names, it goes under a kapok and krul plant. So that milky sap, when it gets on your skin, acts as an irritant. And when I didn't know that when I first started, I'd sometimes come home and my hands were all itchy. But it would go away again. But after that, I started wearing gloves on a regular basis.
Right. So you recommend gloves, obviously.
Yes.
You don't have to worry about protective glasses or other type of ordinary
clothes. That's a very good question. I wear glasses myself, and they've always got spots on them, and they won't go out with the normal glass cleaner. I'd also recommend wearing long sleeves because the sap will get onto your arms, and you can end up with really scratchy arms. Nothing lethal, but unpleasant.
So nothing life-threatening.
Long sleeves, long trousers. And I wear dirty old clothes because the stains do not go out of the clothes even when you put them in the washing machine.
Okay. Now, this is important information.
It is, indeed.
And because if you're going to go out hacking away at this stuff. Now, if somebody wanted to get involved in clearing moth plant, where would they go? Well, you know, how would you do something like that?
Well, that assumes that they've seen a place which is infested. They've seen a vine.
Yeah, but even if they just wanted to be a volunteer and say, come along on one of your escapades.
What I would recommend to volunteers is to go to Facebook and look at stamp, s.t.a.m.p. Stamp stands for Society Totally Against Moth Plant.
I've never heard of that.
A recent news site. I've only been made aware of it myself since about the beginning of the year. So if ever I don't have enough sites that I've got on my list to treat, I will go to the Facebook and have a look what's been posted there and what's still not been done. Sometimes they tell you, of course, that they've done it or there's a group going to do it. But that would be one way to find or to make contact with other volunteers.
That's a brilliant suggestion. I had no idea it existed.
It was new to me, as I said. It was completely new to me myself at the beginning of the year.
So basically what you're saying is you're not alone out there in having a passion for stamping out moth plant.
No, there are other addicts, I guess you could say.
Milkweed addicts?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, but still, that's great.
Yep.
That's great, because actually making it social is a great idea.
Yeah, well, as I say, I have friends in the Friends of Mongafo group who are just as keen as I am. But we all have our slightly different ways of doing it. They always like, they tend to like working in groups, and I really don't mind going on my own, because in a group you have to plan it beforehand and you have to fix the time. And for myself, when I go out on my own, I'll say, oh, look, I've got nothing else to do this afternoon. Why don't I just head down to Wiri, which is where I've been working recently. There's a really bad infestation there. And spend a couple of hours there. The site in Wiri, incidentally, is so large, it's going to take at least a dozen more trips before we get all that done. And but at the end, it's satisfying, because we can say, well, hopefully we've got all the pods, and we'll have to recheck those areas for vines in future occasions, future years. Unless they develop the site. Often I've done a site, and a year later it's been developed, so it's all gone then anyway.
Right, it's been stamped out by the bulldozers.
Yes, that's right.
Right, well, something that just popped into my head, a random question. Is anybody mapping the infestations?
Yes, our teacher friend there in Howick, he's got a Google Earth set up with pins all over Auckland to indicate where moss plant has been located and where it's been treated and where it needs to be checked. So he's got different colors. It's an awesome, really fancy system. And I'm supposed to be putting my pins in there too. And I say, well, when I've done all the sites that I know about, I'll sit down in front of the computer and put some pins into his map. But I haven't really had time to do that, because new sites keep cropping up, and I'd rather get out there and get rid of them first. But what I do for myself is I've got just a simple spreadsheet on my system here, and I will write down the addresses where I've been and how long I've been there. And I have a sort of compulsion to count the pods that I'm picking, so I also enter the number of pods that I've got.
A citizen scientist, I love it.
Yeah,
you can't help yourself.
Can't help it. No, I had a maths background, so it's just good to work with numbers even now.
I was just going to ask. So you said you were retired. What did you do in your former working life before you were working on Mossplant?
Yeah, I started on the very, very first mainframe computers that ever came out, using machine-based programming languages, and kept stayed in the programming area for about 20 years or more. And eventually moving to systems analysis for a couple of life insurance companies. And the last 9 years before retirement, I was a tutor at Manukau Polytechnic in information systems.
Brilliant. Okay. And that has led, in your retirement, to an obsession with counting pods.
It started really, I guess that would have been your next question anyway, in about the end of the 1990s, I didn't retire till 2004, when there was a lot of tree planting, and there still are a lot of groups doing tree planting.
That's so right, across
that's
Auckland.
That's really how I started. And then I'd go back half a year later, and you couldn't see the trees, because they were all covered by kikuyu or other weeds. So that's, since the tree planting only makes sense in the winter, and you can only really do it then, I found something I could do during the summer, spring and summer months, when it was much more pleasant, much warmer outside. And that's how I got into sort of weeding. And at the beginning, I would weed whatever was necessary just to clear the plants. And from there, I eventually specialized, you could say. And now it's nearly only moss plant, although I will do other nasties, and we've got a whole list of them here. If I happen to be passing and there's some there, I might do that at the same time.
Okay, so you're a bit opportunistic with other species.
As well, yes.
What do you see out there commonly? What do you see commonly when you're just...
Well, woolly nightshade, or some people call it tobacco plant.
Right.
And that's all along the motorways as well, and it really covers half of the Bay of Islands. So there's some areas, especially in the northern part of the North Island, which are heavily affected. Further south, you don't get a lot of these. I was down in Christchurch and Timaru for a week at the beginning of the month. I didn't see any moss plant, no woolly nightshade, no nothing.
Perhaps the cooler weather or the frost.
Maybe, kills it all off.
Or at least keeps the numbers down.
Yeah, and we get a lot of wild ginger in Auckland, especially around the west coast.
Yes,
but all through the city as well, and that spreads rapidly as well.
It does. It's in a lot of gullies and culverts that are between developments.
Some places, even with the moss plant, are really hard to get at, because I've seen places where each property has put up a fence, and the vines, the weeds, will grow between the two fences, but you can't get into those gaps.
Right.
But the fences are so high.
That is kind of the type of area I was talking about. I'm thinking of a friend of mine whose house backs onto a gully, and so do like 20 other houses.
Yeah.
And it's infested with the wild ginger simply because it's nobody's property.
Right, exactly.
And it's not accessible from any street. You have to go through a yard.
We've got a couple of places like that, even in Auckland, along the Northwestern Motorway, for instance, in Western Springs. You go around and look at from the properties, and the council has put fences up, and there's no gates, and they're really high fences, so they're real weed traps.
Right. Now, is that council property?
It often is, but sometimes no one really knows, and when you ask, you don't get a decent answer.
Right. Have you tried biosecurity as opposed to...
We work with... Yeah, I work a lot with biosecurity. Yes, we have contacts there.
Right.
And I was gonna... Actually, also Auckland Council generally is very, very helpful in providing the pesticide we need and occasionally the right tools. And just this week, at the beginning of the week, I was really fortunate in that my contact at council was able to send out a contractor from Envirotech, and they came to my place and took away about a dozen of sacks that I had piled up in the yard and made it really hard to move around the yard, and they just took them all away at once. I do normally put the sacks in the weedy bin, but as I said, the weedy bins are only emptied once a week, and mine fills up usually in 1 or 2 days. So I have to pile the rest up and wait till someone picks them up for me or until I can drop them off at neighbours or at my daughter's or somewhere else around the town.
Right. So disposal is an issue, I suppose, if you're out there doing the job.
It certainly is, yes. If you're doing more than just a couple of hours at a time, I mean, if I have a good week and I'm not doing anything else, I might do 2 or 3 hours a day, which will add up to about 15 hours for the week, and that'll usually produce something like 7 or 8 sacks.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, so it's fun to keep statistics on that.
Yeah, yes indeed. So you don't compost them?
No, they'll still germinate.
Right, it would have to be a hot compost. You'd have to be really particular conditions to prevent that.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
No one that I've spoken to who was in the know would ever recommend composting them.
Right.
What you can do is dig a deep hole in your garden and bury them. That would work.
Right. Or as you said earlier, get them to landfill where they get buried deep.
Yep.
Okay. That's amazing.
It's good fun, as I said, and it's good exercise, good outdoor activity.
Yeah.
And it's productive for the environment as well, but that's just a sideline. That's an incidental benefit.
Oh, it's just accidentally good for all of us, is it?
Yes.
Right. So if somebody wanted to get in touch with, say, Friends of Mongafoe, just to get in touch with an organization, how would they go about doing that?
Yes, Friends of Mongafoe would have a website. I don't know if you want to give them my email address or something, or just point out the stamp group on the Facebook.
Oh, probably just for your privacy and peace of mind, we'll leave your email address out of it.
Otherwise, appreciate it.
You could be starting an NGO if we're not careful.
That's right.
But the stamp Facebook page,
yes,
and that's S.T.M.P.P.
Yes.
The stamp Facebook page is probably a great starting point for anyone, whether you're in Auckland or not.
Yes, yeah.
Because I presume that, it has somewhat of a national coverage.
I could make possibly one other conjecture. If anyone is interested and wants to try it on their own, I suggest that they just walk around any of the reserves in their neighborhood, and I would guess that if they walk through 3 reserves, they would find at least 1 infestation.
That common?
I think the rate, I mean, I haven't done it for a while. I just have so many other sites on my list of places still to go to. But if I ever have covered them all and ticked them off, I will do exactly what I just recommended myself. And because I moved house about a year ago, I now live in a new area, and there are reserves around here where I haven't been yet, so I shall check that out myself and see if that prognosis is correct or if other people have been so busy that it's all been cleared.
Right. So you're obviously on Facebook, or you wouldn't know about Stamp.
That's it.
Yep. And I suppose you're now watching the Stamp Facebook page because it's got activities that you're interested in. So if people want to follow up with you in particular, they can find you on Facebook, find you on Stamp.
They can. A lot of the sites that have appeared on Stamp, on Facebook, lately have been on the North Shore, and I know there are quite a few people active over there, so I don't bother much about the North Shore. There are some sites I know fairly far in the south of Auckland, and that's also a fair hike for me, so at the moment I'm just going to Wiri, which is also South Auckland, of course, but it's easily accessible from the motorway. But there are other areas I know of in Manurewa where I probably am not going to get to this year, and they might have to wait till next year.
And loading them up on a Stamp would give somebody else an opportunity to hit them.
That's right, yes. So a couple of other areas that I have been to in the last month or two are Otara and Otahu, and both of those have quite a few sites. And I think often just driving along the streets, you develop an instinct for where you might see them, and you'll catch a pod at the corner of your eye, and so you'll know that's a place to go to if you ever run out of spots.
The human mind is an amazing thing. I'm sure after this interview I'm going to start to see those pods everywhere.
Yes, and let me know where you find them. Just write down the address. I have about 3 spotters at the moment who will send me addresses.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, well, there's a thought. If you're a spotter out there, I'm just talking to the listeners now. If you're a spotter, put it on the Stamp Facebook page.
Yes.
And don't worry about who picks that up. At least it's captured.
And then when the person's done it, they should go back to the site and say, this has been done, to stop someone else having to go there and find, oh, there's none here, or it's all gone.
Right. That's pretty amazing. I'm really impressed with what you're doing. And I suppose what impresses me more than anything is that you're doing it on your own bat without an NGO or a big organization, although you're helping out other NGOs. And, of course, you are working with council.
Yes, we appreciate the council support. And, I mean, they would love to do more, but it's not in their budget. So we're saving everyone's rates having to go up. Well, they'll go up anyway, but they would go up even more if we weren't doing...
Right, well,
if council had to do this work.
You're also saving on our health budget because you're out there exercising on a regular basis.
Yeah, true.
And it probably has greater health benefits.
I bumped my head yesterday, but, you know, it's all part of the job.
Probably has greater health benefits than any other.
Good.
Well, Oliver, we're running out of time. We've actually gone for 26, 27 minutes.
Yep.
I want to thank you very much for coming on the show this morning, congratulate you on your work, and say keep it up.
Yes, thank you very much, Rick. I really appreciate the program you're running, and I wish you much success with that in the future. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
No, it's not the ghost.
Listening. If you've missed anything in today's program, don't forget, you can listen again online at any time.